This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In conjunction with World AIDS Day tomorrow, the Kuala Lumpur AIDS Support Services Society, or CLASS, is organizing a series of events to raise awareness about HIV prevention. We're finding out more from our guest today about, of course, HIV prevention, as well as the avenues required to provide more effective HIV care. My guests are Martin Chu, the General Manager of CLASS, and Dr. Yasmin Mohamed Ghani, a consultant in infectious diseases. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you very much.
So let's start with, how do we know how many people are living with HIV today?
So we have an estimated about 100,000 over people in Malaysia who are actually living with HIV. And the key populations are basically, the prevalence of HIV is about more than 5% in certain key populations. So those are your intravenous drug users, male who have sex with men, we call it MSMs, those who have acquired it through sexual transmissions, as well as transgender population and female sex workers. And of course, there's a small minority who acquire the infection through other reasons as well.
And what can you make out of our current data and statistics? I mean, do we have enough information? Do we need to be collecting more?
So I suppose when you talk about data collection, there are always loopholes everywhere, right? It's never, if you actually look at the global AIDS response chart, there's actually a very nice chart that tells you about how notification rate seems to be coming down. However, the amount of new infections seems to be stabilizing, you know, over the past 3 years. So definitely in terms of data collection, we could be much better because there's this thing called the HIV treatment cascade, where we talk about how many people are actually being diagnosed and how many people are actually linked to treatment. So there's a huge furnace when it comes to that, you know. It's like an inverted triangle. So the amount of people who are actually linked to care and the amount of people who are actually diagnosed are hugely disproportionate, you know. Probably about, although we've got about 100,000 people over, but the amount of people who are actually on treatment are probably, you know, just 1 in 5 of them. So it's only about hardly about 20,000 to about 30,000 people who are actually linked to care. So even when you look at those numbers, you already know that, you know, not just data collections, is something that we're not doing right yet. Still needs to be improved.
And on the ground level, right. Do you see these numbers reflected in terms of the work that CLASS is doing? I mean, because it's one thing, sometimes you hear numbers and you hear them, especially in a clinical setting, and then you don't, it's hard to kind of translate that into more human faces, I guess, more human stories. But are you seeing the numbers that Dr. Yasmin's talking about reflected as well?
Right. So we do HIV prevention work as well as HIV care. And in our HIV testing work, so we take people through the clinic kesihatan system. And we are seeing people who are being diagnosed rather early in life, in their 20s. And so we are seeing those numbers. Right now, we have over 800 people on our books. And in the bigger picture, in getting people into care and through the Kementerian Kesehatan system, we are also seeing great numbers in those areas.
With that said, how does our HIV scene, so to speak, compare to global numbers? Are we seeing the same sort of risk factors? Are there anything that is unique to Malaysia?
So there's nothing really that unique to Malaysia. Globally, as well as in Malaysia, we're seeing a paradigm shift in HIV transmission, right? So when you talk about your it first came to Malaysia in the 1980s. So those times, the major form of transmission, mode of transmission, we call it, is mainly through injecting drug users, right? But now what we're seeing is a more sexual transmission, which is going up. So infections acquired through heterosexual contact or homosexual contact or bisexual contacts are definitely on the increase, right?
That's right.
The other shift that we're seeing is they are tending to be younger, You know, the amount of new younger people, like Mr. Martin said, is definitely increasing.
Do we know why that is? I mean, there was a point in time where there was no disease that was scarier than HIV. And yet, and you would think that with that kind of effort and with that kind of information, prevention, or at least even something as simple as just using fear, you know, would have been seemingly effective, especially in the younger population. So why are we still seeing those numbers?
Well, when it comes to sex, it's a rather taboo subject in Asia, and B, that people have sex because they feel amorous, they love somebody, and it's very hard in those circumstances to talk about prevention. But when we do, it's usually linked to having sex with a sex worker, for example. So you don't use prevention or prevention techniques with somebody you love.
And so is there a way to break through that? I mean, that is, as you point out, a very prevalent taboo. But at the same time, it's one that I feel like we've been talking about for many years now.
It is. But we have to talk about it differently. We have to talk about it more openly. And we have to talk about it more often. For example, what we're doing now with class is to talk about prevention being pleasurable. It does not need to be a wholly clinical approach to prevention. Condoms do not need to be just safe. They can be also fun, for example.
We're talking today about HIV prevention and providing more effective HIV care. If you've got any questions for either of our guests today, do give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, as mentioned, this year's theme is HIV prevention. Could you elaborate on the message?
So I suppose globally, we've sort of understood one thing. There's only two things that we can actually do. I suppose two main focus is basically to increase access to treatment to as many people as possible. And number two is actually to increase and improve and enhance our prevention work. So the theme, the UNAIDS theme for World AIDS Day this year is basically hands up for HIV prevention. So there are many ways in which HIV can actually be prevented. Of course, everyone talks about increasing awareness and increasing education, but that's all that we have actually advocated over the past a few years. But as you can see, the data is so stable for the past 4 years or 6 years, the numbers are not coming down. And that's very worrying, all right? That's really worrying. So when we talk about HIV prevention, we need to openly talk about the usage of condoms, like Mr. Martin brought up, you know, the usage of what we call as pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP in certain situations, you know, reducing stigma, reducing violence against HIV so that more people actually will not be scared to give that or do that blood test in order to see whether, especially if they're in the high risk group, you know, in order to detect more and more people. And harm reduction, talking about harm reduction is another one, where you actually provide sort of like a stage for IVDUs to like needle exchange programs and methadone replacement therapy and all that in order to prevent these activities or reduce the harm reduction activities. Of course, other people talk about male circumcision and all that. All that reduces your risk of getting HIV. So that's the key.
When we look at PrEP, for example, you know, some barrier techniques seem to be more easily accessible than others. For example, condoms you can buy in most, mostly anywhere, really, convenience stores, so on and so forth. But when it comes to PrEP, how widely available is it here in Malaysia? Do you need to go through anything in order to get your hands on it, for example?
So that's a very good point. Let's talk about PrEP a bit later. But when you talk about barrier method, that is the that is probably something that will guarantee you a really that will probably guarantee HIV prevention. But an additional additional method of reducing or transmitting HIV is definitely by using PrEP. If you would, if you think you're at risk of transmission and acquiring HIV, you could see, you will have to see an infectious disease physician like myself in order for you to see whether you're eligible for PrEP or not.
We're speaking today about, about World AIDS Day, which is not today, but in fact tomorrow. And we're finding out more about HIV prevention because that's the theme this year, as well as providing more effective HIV care. If you've got any questions for either Martin or Dr. Yasmin, give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. Any questions about HIV, about AIDS, if you're just concerned, if you'd like to raise anything, tell any stories, do call us. You can also text 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. My guest today, Dr. Yasmin Mohamed Ghani, consultant in infectious diseases, and Martin Chu, the general manager of CLAS, and that's the Kuala Lumpur AIDS Support Services Society. They're both here because it is a very important day tomorrow, December 1st, especially in the health calendar. It is World AIDS Day. We're still fighting this disease so many decades after it first kind of hit the scene. And today we're talking primarily about prevention as well as care and treatment. Let's take a look back at the history of HIV and AIDS. When it was first detected all those decades ago, what was the quality of life and access to healthcare and public awareness like for the patients who were primarily affected by this?
So, well, it came here in our shores right around mid-1980s, 1986 to be exact. That's the time when we didn't have effective antiretroviral therapy. So obviously, a lot of AIDS-related deaths were seen, and there was grim everywhere, and people were refusing to come out. And at that point, we were seeing more of intravenous drug users coming in and just dying right in front of our eyes, with nothing much for us to do. I mean, we may have treatment to treat the infections that they came in with, but there was no effective antiretroviral therapy, as we call it. That's a treatment for HIV in order to reverse their immune deficiency. 20 years later, it's like decades later, the scene has completely changed. So effective antiretroviral therapy was actually introduced somewhere in the late 1990s, and people were seeing themselves getting better and going back to a normal, relatively normal lifestyle. And you can actually predict and say a life expectancy of someone who has HIV is probably somewhere equal to someone who does not have HIV. So, of course, it comes with its own complications, like what you see in every chronic illnesses, like diabetes and hypertension, strokes. You know, they all have their own set of complications, but it's completely changed.
I've been living with HIV for more than 10 years now, and with effective antiretroviral therapy, I have a very normal lifespan. I don't know about the lifespan, but I have a very normal life. I go to work. I just have to monitor my bloods. And given that, we now know that effective antiretroviral therapy helps us prevent the transmission of HIV. So with me, with a suppressed viral load, I cannot transmit the virus.
How are we doing in terms of research into HIV and AIDS? You know, are there new drugs, are there tests, are there prevention methods? Because while antiretrovirals have, of course, played their part in changing the lives of many people, as you both rightly reference, we have been talking about ARVs for an awfully long time. Is there anything that's new or that has come up that offers that same sort of game-changing quality?
So they are the earlier HIV drugs, I suppose, came and which are equally as effective. And sometimes we actually fall back on them when we are stuck with the new therapies. Definitely, they are much more newer drugs which are in the market, and probably there are some still in the phase one, phase two trial that's been going on in order to simplify therapy. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the 1980s or 1990s, mm-hmm. someone had to take more than 10 pills a day,
right?
But now you're talking about a simplified therapy of just once a day. And the mode of transmission of HIV is something that I really, really have to stress. You cannot get HIV just by touching someone or sharing a room with them or going to work with them. Or
sharing cutlery.
Sharing cutlery, sharing the bathroom, sharing clothes. No, you don't. You know, there's a specific ways.
Or even kissing them.
Or even, yeah. You know, there are specific ways in which someone actually acquires, and that's normally to blood transfusion or blood or blood products related transmission. And a mom who has HIV can actually pass it to her child if she's not well suppressed, you know. Those are, and of course, by sharing needles, that the common mode of transmission in injecting drug users.
If you've got any questions today about HIV or AIDS, that number to call 03-7710-9000. You can also text 0162-019000 or tweet us at PFM Radio. When it comes to treatment, how are we doing here in Malaysia in terms of providing support for people who are living with HIV and AIDS? Is it expensive? Is it accessible?
Well, treatment is available for free for Malaysians. That's the amazing thing about our government and our service here. And CLAS provides peer support network for people who live with HIV, marrying them with, partnering them with newly diagnosed people living with HIV, so that they can have like a buddy system to learn about what it's like living with HIV. There are some issues there to make it easier to deal with the disease. And then once we let them go when they've suppressed their viral loads and they keep up with their doctor's appointments and leave them into care, but they can always contact us. We are always open to offer support, be it peer support or more counselling and psychosocial support.
We referenced. Sorry.
I'm just going to add. When it came to just add on to Martin. So yes, the government provides free treatment for first liners. So they are first lines and second lines, and first lines generally, as much as we can afford it, is actually free. But when it comes to second lines, it's heavily subsidized by the government.
And second line here, what do we mean by that?
So first line treatment are for people who are not or never been on treatment before. And when that treatment fails due to a certain reason, then we will have to think about second-line treatment in order to increase the suppression of the viral load.
And I brought up PrEP earlier.
That's right.
And how does PrEP work?
So PrEP works by basically reducing... So PrEP is basically just taking one of those drugs that we give. So treatment of HIV is combination therapy. So you need to be on at least three medicines, right? So the issue surrounding PrEP is probably over-advertised, right? So even there was this particular study that was done where serodiscordant couple, we call it, where one person is actually positive and one person is not. And they had unprotected sex most of the time. And they found that there was not much transmission between the partner who was actually negative. So, and that did not really depend on whether PrEP worked or not. So PrEP only works. PrEP basically works on the context that you would like to kill off whatever viral particle that actually enters your body. So that's sort of like the basis of PrEP. But for PrEP to work, you have to have a recent test to say that it is that you are HIV negative, basically. But the thing is, PrEP is not the answer for anything. PrEP is probably an adjunctive treatment in addition to all the precautions that probably are more beneficial than PrEP.
Martin, perhaps you could address this. I mean, sure. Considering that it's combination therapies that we're talking about, is there an issue with patient compliance? You know, because for many people, remembering to take medication, even for short-term illnesses, right. never mind chronic, mm-hmm. is difficult, especially when it's in your own hands, mm-hmm. when it's your own responsibility to administer the medicine.
It is. It's extremely important for HIV, especially because people have to take their medications daily for the rest of their lives and on time. And give or take a rather small window of leeway, we need to encourage people to be compliant. And how we do that at CLAS is that we have a peer support network, a peer support system attached to hospitals. Six sites in Klang Valley and Seremban, and we provide we call them up and we make sure that they collect their medication, they go and see their doctors on time, and they also that they don't fall behind in taking their medication. And we do that periodically with each client. We follow them and we case manage them through the system.
Right now, do either of you see any gaps that you think are crucial to address? I mean, Dr. Yasmin, earlier you said clearly we're not doing something right. We're not sure what that something is yet. But, you know, in your opinion, where is that gap, or what is at least one of the gaps that might need to be plugged?
I think the key to stopping... So there's this thing called the National Strategy Plan to Stop AIDS by the year 2030, which mm-hmm. is in conjunction with UniAIDS 1990 reduction, which means that by the year 2030, 95% of people should be tested, 95% of people should be on treatment, and 95% of people should have a viral load, which is undetected. So that is the global aim. Whereas,
And also, and just to clarify, so 95% undetectable viral load means that they are compliant with their medication. It means that they take their medication on time and stick with their doctor's appointments.
Yeah. So in order, like I said, the last 5 years, the graph hasn't edged. There's definitely a reduction in amount of AIDS-related deaths and number of people who have HIV. It's about the same mm-hmm. number. But I should see that graph coming down. So if that the only way that graph is actually going to come down is if we increase our prevention work through methods I had told before. So one of the key programs is basically intensifying the testing of people in these key populations. You know, it's very important community-based testing. So we're actually increasing community-based testing, hospital mm-hmm. testing, private lab testing. And this should all be voluntary. It shouldn't be, you can't see us in the middle of a shopping mall trying to, telling people to come and test for HIV. That won't work. So it has to be something voluntary. So it's very important to increase awareness in these key populations, right? And I think the key is actually to go to increase awareness in college students.
That's right.
Well, that leads up to a question that I was curious about. I mean, as you said just now, we're seeing younger and younger people come
That's
into
right.
this. So for people who are listening right now who don't belong to this high risk, to any of the high risk groups, who are not, who are not intravenous drug users, who
Correct.
Are not men who have sex with men, etc., who are not sex workers, what then? I mean, should we still get tested?
Yes, if they have had unprotected sex, they should definitely get tested. And if they feel that they have been exposed to risk for acquisition of HIV, they should definitely get tested. Yes, right.
Anyone who has had a history of sexually transmitted disease before should also get tested. The thing is, it never starts off. It normally mm-hmm. starts with something mm-hmm. very innocent. Mm-hmm. Normally starts off, something as smoking pot in college and just talking or curious about sex. It normally starts off with something really, really benign, right? But if that behavior is not addressed or the queries are not addressed at a very sensitive manner, mm-hmm. it leads to a more bigger bigger problems later in life. So like curiosity killed cat kind of a situation. So we're also seeing increasing number of MET users in the younger population.
That's right.
And that will also lead to, you know, risky behavior. Maybe not now, but it may be later. But if you're already aware of it, you know, you might take steps to prevent it. Yeah.
Well, the best prevention is the individual making the right decision at the time. And as we all know with sex, people are not often thinking very rationally when it comes to the time when one has sex. So talking about it helps, and also being aware of all the combination of prevention methods that is available to you also would be helpful.
So who needs to be involved in designing and delivering prevention programs and services, considering there is a need for a more multi-pronged approach, considering that you're talking to different groups of people and you're trying to reach out to them all at the same time? Who needs to be involved in putting this together?
Everyone?
Yeah.
I was going to say communities,
but everyone. But communities specifically with the different populations. So intravenous or injection drug users, men who have sex with men, transgender people, and sex workers should all get involved and mobilize within their own communities to get people tested and treated when they're found to be positive, and ensure that they suppress the viral loads, because that's the key to really effective HIV prevention.
In terms of policymaking, what are we doing to address stigma and discrimination? I mean, this is the perennial question for HIV and for AIDS. I mean, do we guarantee things like employment, mobility, public services? Do we provide that aside from treatment?
So as part of the National Strategic Plan for Ending AIDS, this is one of the key issues that they've actually addressed. So we all know we're actually aiming to have zero discrimination in healthcare services and community. And we are doing that with a lot of help from NGOs like even CLASS and MEC. We're actually having a lot of people now coming into our ID clinics and telling us, look, you know, it's a big difference. You know, I've done it, you know. So you can do it too. So that's definitely more effective than me sitting across the table who doesn't have HIV and say, just take your pills, you know. Mm-hmm. We're also reviewing, I suppose, and removing some legislations and regulations which are surrounding these reduction of stigma and you know, in conjunction with reducing stigma and discrimination. And, of course, providing adequate social protections now for people living with HIV.
But stigma stems from fear, the fear of a lot of the time the boogeyman, the unknown also. And a lot of the times, so we have, for example, a caller who keeps calling in, who's had very minimal risk of HIV acquisition, but he's had 9 HIV tests, they're all negative, and he keeps calling in because he needs to be reassured, and that is due to HIV stigma. He's afraid of becoming HIV positive. And then the last call I had was, what if I'm positive? Well, there is treatment. I'm speaking to you and you seem fine. So not that it's the end of the world or just the end of the world, but that people do have continue to have productive lives after HIV. And that's a key to ending stigma.
Martin, you've referenced a number of different services that CLASS provides. Mm-hmm. You talked earlier about, you know, counselling in some ways, matching people up so that there's sort of a mentor system, at least somebody to help you through these things. And you're also going to be organising several events throughout December. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes. So we're increasing for HIV prevention and also HIV awareness, we will be at locations in the Klang Valley and in Seremban. On the 1st, we will be at Hospital Tengku Ampuan Rahimah in Klang, Hospital Sungai Buloh, and Hospital Kajang. On the 3rd, we will be at the Cornerstone Baptist Church in PJS 7 in Bandar Sunway. On the 5th, we will be at University Malaya Medical Centre. On the 10th, we will be at UITM Seremban 3. On the 15th, we will be at MSU in Selangor and also Hospital Rehabilitasi Cheras. And we'll set up pop-up booths to provide information about HIV and also sell some brownies, goodies. But two key talks that are happening is a talk for targeted at college students on the 3rd of December at the Cornerstone Baptist Church in Pandasanway, featuring Datuk Dr. Chris Lee, as well as a talk by Datin Paduka Marina Mahathir on HIV in young people.
One of the things that I wanted to ask both of you earlier was that HIV and AIDS obviously hasn't gone away. We haven't seen that move on the graph, as you talked about earlier, you know, that drop that we would like to see. And yet we don't hear about it as much as we used to. It used to be much more sort of front and center when it came to infectious diseases. And in some ways, with the H's and the N's coming into the picture, with all these different diseases coming in, we seem to have, in some ways, lost sight of HIV. Why do you think that is?
Well, I actually probably will beg to differ a little bit on that, probably because it's all I do. So there have been policies and programs that are already set in place, right? Like the needle exchange program, you know, reducing stigma and getting people access to treatment. Like I said, it needs a little bit of boost. It needs a little bit of intensification, right? People need to act a little bit more aggressive, right? It can't be business as usual. So on a regular basis, we have been trying to increase awareness and increase, you know, we last year there was even in conjunction with last 2 years, sorry, there was even in conjunction with World AIDS Day, we had this massive walk involving KTM and awareness activities have been happening here and there. But like with all chronic diseases, right? There has to be intermittent reminding of people of what this disease can actually do.
That's right.
Not just HIV or AIDS, you know. It's with any chronic illnesses, you know, whether it's diabetes. There's always an undercurrent of activities which is actually going on. But intermittently, this has to be resurfaced.
We have to remember that it's a very successful virus that has killed almost 40 million people around the world. And so we can't not be vigilant about it. We have to remain steadfast, and we have to keep up the work that we do, and in fact increase it, because as we get closer to zero, it's going to be harder and harder. And Malaysia has done a great job already, but we have so much more to do. And thanks to Dr. Yasmin and team, we're in good hands, but they need the support that we can offer them.
Treatment centres are quite widespread across. I think Malaysia has one of the best healthcare system where anyone, even in the rural areas, can actually get access to treatment, and that's no different for HIV.
What messages do you think it's important for Malaysians to hear when it comes to HIV and AIDS, since we are battling this on home ground, since we want, you know, we want that number to drop? What do you want people to really understand, if you could kind of just sum up that one important thing?
The most important thing I would like to tell people is prevention is the key to stopping any epidemic, right? So if you are not at risk of all the high-risk behaviours that had just outlined, do maintain that way. I don't know how to put it, but keep it going. Whereas, like Martin said, if you are someone who think that you have a risk factor or could have exposed yourself in a situation where, I mean, knowingly or unknowingly, you know, exposed yourself to a situation where you could have acquired the disease, get access to testing. And if positive, there is excellent treatment available.
That's right. I want to say this again, treatment is prevention. If you are HIV positive, one of the best things you can do for yourself is to get tested, or if testing positive, to get yourself onto treatment and to adhere to the treatment. It's not difficult after that. You can have a normal, healthy life.
The scary part is at the start in some ways.
The scary part is taking yourself to the clinic. And we were there to help you.
How would you encourage listeners to learn more about HIV and AIDS and to get involved in their own communities, whatever the communities may be?
The first thing is to avail themselves of the information, how HIV can be acquired, so that they don't not only spread HIV, but not spread HIV stigma. There's no need to isolate people who are HIV positive or you think may be HIV positive. There's no need to not be friends with somebody who may be at risk for HIV. Because by isolating people and defriending them makes them more vulnerable and increases the level of risk, which at some point I would dare say, know somebody in our social networks who is possibly HIV positive, if not at risk for being HIV positive.
Dr. Yasmin?
So I think the best way to get some information, of course, everyone is in an internet age, right?
Yes.
So my son loves the internet more than I do, but yeah. So it's all there. Information is there for you. You know, there are reputable sites, you know,
right.
WHO, PT, CLASS, all offer excellent information regarding mode of transmission of HIV and what do you do if you're tested, where are you going to get tested, you know, how you can do it anonymously, you know, it's all there. It's just the act of getting that courage in order for you to press the right buttons. Mm. And once you've pressed it, I totally agree. Isolating, and if you are a friend of somebody who you know has got HIV or has got a risk of HIV, you know, do not isolate them. Do not defriend them, you know. Don't do that because we have a responsibility as a community. We can't be so self-centered and say, look, you know, I don't care what happens to him, you know, I'm fine, I'll just continue. No. We live in a multicultural society. We have a certain responsibility towards our community, as we do towards our parents or our family. So it's important to create awareness among everyone. That's why I said everyone. You know, it's and I think the key is actually to spread this kind of an awareness during these kind of activities. So there's a modem for us to let you know. And that's why we're here today.
Thank you both very much for coming in today. I've been speaking with Martin Chu, the General Manager of CLASS, that's the Kuala Lumpur AIDS Support Services Society. Martin, if someone wanted to get in touch with CLASS, how could they do so?
They can call us at 4045-6681. Or they can email us at enquiries, ENQUIRIES, at myclass.org.
Wonderful. Also with Dr. Yasmin Mohamed Ghani, who is a consultant in infectious diseases. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
We've been discussing HIV prevention and HIV care in conjunction with World AIDS Day, which again is tomorrow, December 1st. You are listening today to Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.